The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 27th of April, 2020. On the podcast today, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources, BZT is ticker there, and Colin discusses their joint venture agreement to acquire 30% of the Kalengwa exploration project in Zambia. Also on the podcast, Nicholas Lee, Director of Perez Investments, PIRI, discusses what the placing to raise £1 million will be used for. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about Vasarian, Two Shields Investments, and Katane Innovation. He also talks about old motorbikes. Yeah, motorbikes. Old ones. I don't know. If you've got one in your garage that's just gathering dust, could be worth something. Apparently, get in contact with Alan. Also on the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. You can see both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see our COVID-19 index, which is a bunch of companies, a whole bunch. How many have you got there now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 times 4, or 28. 28 companies who may benefit from the fight against the COVID virus, or even just benefit their business model because of the lockdown or the way in which society's changed of late. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Bezant Resources. BZT is the ticker. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Pleasure to be talking to you, Justin.
Yeah, and you've announced a joint venture here and an acquisition of the 30% in the Kalengwa exploration project in Zambia. We'll dig into that as always. But for people not familiar, maybe never heard of Bezant, can you just summarise or sum up what it's all about, please, Colin?
Well, Bezant at the moment is essentially has got the Mankayan project, which it is monetized with a Singaporean company, and is currently being listed. That's a big project in the Philippines, and so we're hoping to have a carriage share in that listing, which has got a number of other copper projects, and we await feedback as the listing process continues. It's got a project in Argentina, which is the Eureka project, which is redstone, the band, red beds, the band red beds. That project is in the north, and it's got at the moment the quoted is 600,000 tons of contained copper, say the archives. And then, of course, we've got this acquisition. So, in no small way, I guess Bezant is very focused on copper, copper exploration, and copper development.
Yeah. We'll discuss copper in a bit because, you know, it's, like I said, it's got a bright future. We know that. It's just the moment the market seems to be depressed at the moment, of course, and we know why. Mm. But take us through this project, the Kalengwa exploration project. Why 30%? What's happening here?
Well, the Kalengwa project is a huge project. It's been a mine. There's been a mine in the concession, in the license. That was in the 70s. It was quite a famous little mine. It was direct shipping ore, produced about 2 million tonnes at an average grade of 9.5%. And 20% of that was over 25%. So a remarkable little mine which shipped ore down to the main copper belt. But that's history. And of course, one doesn't want to talk to all these fancy grades. One wants to talk a project which fits today's criteria. And today's criteria essentially is big, open cut, easily to, you know, the subject, the copper, the ore is easily extracted. And essentially, these things nowadays, they're not mining projects, they're civil engineering projects. So there's actually 15 targets on the property which match the historical target. And of course, you know, when one does geophysics and geochemistry retrospectively against a signature like that project, evaluation is made somewhat easier, not as though exploration is ever easy. But we have 15 targets, 15 live targets, so we don't go there blind. And there's a well-defined strike. It's over 13 kilometres to the concession boundary. It's over 13 kilometres. And there's showings at a number of places along that strike. So, as I say, it's not certainly not greenfields, it's brownfields. And we can get in there very fast, and we can add value for our shareholders very, very quickly. So it's a great project. I'm bullish on Zambia, always have been. And it's a well-situated project, which with well above average fundamentals, well above average fundamentals.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned that obviously you can get in there quickly. What's the situation like in Zambia? I mean, obviously most of the world is locked down at the moment. Is it coronavirus? What's the situation there?
I guess the word quickly is in world terms, but at the moment, mining ventures are continuing, exploration is continuing, and mines are working, so there's no lockdown that way. Drill machines are available, and so quickly does mean quickly. I don't think Zambia has not been affected badly by the coronavirus, and things are contained, and life goes on. Not as normal, because they're taking all of the precautions that's being taken around the world. But movement is taking place between cities. Movement is taking place into mines. Materials have been delivered, and copper has been exported. So the country is still live and up and running.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, you mentioned in this release that you'll not be exercising your pre-existing option over the Buffalo project in Zambia. Why is that, then, Colin?
Well, quite frankly, when Christmas arrives, you don't look towards the holidays in July or the trip to Marbella that you've got maybe in June. You know, the reality is this is a big project. It's a very real project. It's got multiple targets. The potential to add value is immediate. I don't want to distract management. I don't want to distract cash. I want to really get into this project and prove up value in the short term. So really, it's all, what it's about. It's about focus. It's really about focus. And we're focusing on that asset because, quite frankly, I'm absolutely delighted that we've managed to acquire it and interested in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And let's talk about copper for a second. I know you're bullish on it. Good reason. I mean, what's the price action been like over the last few weeks, months?
Well, in a world where we'll never need any more metal ever again, it's been resilient, you know. I think its price, it got as high as 5250. I think the price at the moment is around about 5150, which is very, very resilient in the times we find ourselves. I looked at London metal inventories, and they're beginning to tip over now in favour of supply, you know, where our stocks are decreasing. But I think, you know, looking through this coronavirus, and you have to, because, you know, whilst it's a very, very sad situation, it's all these opportunities in our business are more than ever. But it's extremely sad. But let's look beyond it. Let's look beyond it. And by 2030, the chartists in general think that the world demand for copper will be double what it is now. The grade, the average grade of copper, has dropped over the last 15 years, being mined, from 1.3% down to 0.62%. So we're talking here about a subject which is well higher than 0.62. Should be higher than 2% in average over 13 kilometres, I was saying. But let's get back to the copper fundamentals. Boy, there's a demand out there for copper, which is the perfect storm. These forecasts were made in 2018. 2019 was a bit of lackluster. 2020 has brought its own problems. And quite frankly, every month what delays it adds to the impetus. I mean, you look at Chile, for example. 37% of the world's copper. The gestation period from starting drilling to actually mining is about 8 to 9 years. You know, that's 2030. Yeah. The reality of life is a lot of copper projects have been shelved. The demand is real. The supply certainly isn't. Social problems in Chile that I wouldn't want to be facing as a mining company. Zambia is a country where you can work, very transparent, and a good place to work. And copper fundamentals are good, and we're in a great space. And the guys have been knocking on the door for, you know, the big mining companies have been knocking on the door in 2021, looking for new assets, because we've seen the change, Justin. You know, in the old days, the companies used to have big exploration departments, the big companies. They haven't anymore. They've got a new business development department, with probably a couple of geologists in there, and they go out looking for tomorrow's discoveries. So I feel very good about this project. I'm really good about its position, good about the metal, as I've been saying, for copper. And, of course, it's got the history and the indications and the already generated targets to say that it's not going to be the journey of 1,000 lashes. Mm-hmm. So copper's good, project's good, country's good. And that, you know, that's three very important boxes ticked.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'll take those as the three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, Colin. But, yeah, I mean, it does seem, you know, everyone knows that copper is going to rally. It's just like at the moment we've gone through, you know, a global slowdown and now coronavirus. And so, like you say, the longer this goes on for, the faster the rebound will happen, I expect, won't it?
You've hit it absolutely on the nose. And the fact that it manages to hang in there at 5150 is quite surprising. It really is. And does show the strength of the metal and the potential of the metal when the investors and the buyers and the purchasers and the industry returns, just shows that there's some steam behind this metal.
Marvellous stuff. Colin, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nicholas Lee, Director of Pirres Investments. P-I-R-I is ticker there. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Yep, great to be here, Justin.
And you've raised a significant sum of money in this kind of market. It's quite impressive. We'll get into that in a bit for the size of your company, of course. And you did that last week. Before we do that, Nick, and for everyone you know who's not familiar with the company, just explain Pirres Investment. What's it all about?
Sure. So Pirres Investments is a technology-focused investment company. She listed on AIM. I can look at all sorts of technology, but it's at the moment it's principally focused on the sort of software technology space via an investment that it made last year in a venture capital fund called Shore Value Ventures. Mm-hmm. So that's really it in a nutshell.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, tech, very hot space. In fact, have you seen the S&P and the NASDAQ? They're only down about 10% from all-time highs. Anything? A lot of that valuation, of course, is taken up with the big tech companies, which are doing very well. And let's go into this. So, obviously, what's your market cap pre this? Was around about?
Well, it was about £1.5 million pounds. So, we're very pleased about raising this amount of money at a pretty sort of small discount to the prevailing market price, in a market which, is not easy. I mean, there is money out there, but it's not as easy as it was. So we're pretty pleased with that. Mm. And also, we were supported both by existing shareholders, but excitingly, we've got a new major shareholder in the form of Chris Akers, who, as you're aware, is has got a pretty good track record on investing in the technology sector.
Yeah, he's done very well. I've had Chris on the podcast previously. Yeah, he's a decent investor. Knows exactly what he's doing. Very sharp guy. And do you know him personally, or what happened?
No, I mean we had a sort of chat with him, and he really liked what we were doing. I think the interesting thing with Pirres is that we've got this interesting portfolio of quite exciting companies that are all doing pretty well as our sort of starting core investment in technology to sort of get us going. And then we have more recently been making some direct investments. So the one that we did really in March actually this year, directly was a company called Get Visibility that is really sort of, it manages data, but also provides data security. And there was an article out the other day that, you know, with the advent of all this home working, the amount of cybercrime has gone up exponentially. Mm-hmm. So anything that's in that sort of cybersecurity type space is very exciting at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's moving online, isn't it? And so what's the, I mean, and the goal here ultimately is, of course, to make money, but what's your, you know, how?
Yeah, the goal is to really develop the business to obviously make returns from the current investments, but also to, you know, deploy more capital. And you know, I must admit, to date, the strategy has been pretty we've achieved a lot more than I expected we would have achieved. So, you know, having invested back in November of last year, very shortly thereafter, one of the portfolio companies, a company called Artomatics, was sold for a significant premium to the original investment figure, and that returned, you know, will return in total about 800,000 euros into Pires. And, you know, the nice thing about investing in this fund is that whenever there's a realization, the investors actually get the money paid out, so it doesn't sort of stay in the fund. So even though it's a multi-year fund, you know, you expect to get returns during that period. So that's been pretty successful. And then another couple of three actual other companies in the fund, VRE, which is listed on AIM, that share price has gone up quite significantly since the beginning of the year. And then there have been further follow-on fundraises with some of the other companies. So Admix is one, Woolduck is another, again, a significant premium to the original valuation that the fund invested at. So, you know, in the space of 6 months, you know, the investment has done extremely well.
Yeah, yeah. And of all the investments you have there, is there, obviously they're all have potential, otherwise you would invest in them. But is there one you think, that's very interesting, that's good.
Well, I mean, I think they're all pretty pretty interesting, really. I mean, there are a couple in the sort of more the cybersecurity space, which is obviously very important at the moment. There's something that one of the companies is involved in, sort of sensing work. It's difficult, but they're all pretty interesting. I mean, it's a very interesting, exciting portfolio, I would say.
Okay, well, as always, Nick, if someone's listening, likes the sound of what you're doing here, and are not yet following the company, give them three quick reasons why you hit that follow button on your page and add your watch list.
Yeah. Okay. So I think really, you know, in essence, the key sort of attractive elements for Pires is that, you know, by investing in Pires, you get exposure to really quite an exciting portfolio of potentially high growth companies that ordinarily, as a sort of an investor, you might not be able to get access to those, and that's a pretty important element. And then I think the other element is that, you know, especially having done this fundraise, we believe we're in a very good position to implement our strategy, which we believe to date has been very successful.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous stuff. Nick, good to chat to you. And like I said, lots going on, so hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Great. All right, Justin, thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. All right, Al.
Very good morning, Jess. Yes, it's a bit cloudier today. I think our run of sunshine and brilliant weather might be coming to an end. But
it's not a weather forecast, Al. You only need to talk about stocks. You know that, didn't you?
Oh yeah. Okay. Right. Stocks. Okay.
It's a different podcast. That is. That's the other one.
Oh,
we do.
That's a weather forecast, of course. The weather podcast. Yes. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see. Actually, I saw a poll yesterday because I don't get out much anyway, to be honest. But I'm just feeling a bit spoiled of this lockdown now. And I can see that happening in the figures. You know, there's a lot more people travelling around, but that looks a bit on the weekend. And it's the weather. It's the weather has been glorious, which is typical, isn't it? You know, the fact that we can't go out, and yet the weather's saying, come on out!
Exactly.
And we can't!
Exactly. Yeah. But also experiencing vivid dreams as well. That's another phenomenon of lockdown, apparently. Lots of people are just having these really weird, vivid dreams. And
drinking too much, eating too much, that is, isn't it, really?
That's probably right, yes.
I was I couldn't sleep at all last night. I don't know why. I just woke up at sort of midnight. I'd been to bed, went to bed at sort of 9 o'clock, woke up at midnight, and I just couldn't even get back to sleep. So now I'm feeling it the worst for wear a bit. I'm a bit tired, but there we are. Let's talk stocks. What do you got in your mind?
Okay, first of all, Vrsaryan, VRS is the epicode.
Neil's the podcast on, where was he on? Was he on Monday? Where was it? Last week? I don't know, yeah.
Last week, yeah.
Friday.
Last week, probably. That's it. Last week, talking about this fantastic deal with Rolls-Royce, which is great. I mean, a collaboration with a huge brand name like Rolls-Royce is great news for the company. But just to go into a bit of background, first of all, shares have they've just come off their year lows. Actually, the shares fell sharply to 22 pence, it was there were concerns about funding, and of course, the company have entered into a 6 million subscription agreement with Landsteg Capital, which I think caused a sharp intake of breath across the markets, because Landsteg, of course, is death spiral the right word? It's probably viewed as that by many people, but the facts are that if the investment comes in at the right time, then the agreement can work out very favorably both for the lender and for the company that's borrowed the money in the first place. And it would seem that Vrsaryan probably timed their entry or their agreement with Landsteg just about right, because, of course, they announced the Rolls-Royce agreement last week. But just a bit of background, engineering solutions company with the solution is based around graphene, which, of course, is the nano-thin graphene wafer and the associated products. The company has a group of five companies within it: 2D technology, which applies science to tech; Cambridge Graphene, which produces a range of graphene inks; Cyroma, which produces graphene enhanced plastic products, injection molding, vacuum forming, and so on; Total Carbide, which is at the business end, well, it's at the heavyweight end, if you like, since it manufactures Sinston tungsten carbide products, wear resistant parts such as parts for use in the oil and gas industry, and also uses in defense and aerospace as well. And they have a US sales arm as well, Vrsaryan Graphene Texas. So the company have progressed and obviously had a great run on the shares, with shares sort of well over £1.20 this time last year. But of course, the company moved to reassure shareholders at the start of the year after the price fell. There were funding concerns, and obviously those funding concerns have now been allayed. And also, I should point out, the agreement with Landsteg doesn't preclude the company from going to other borrowers to form other agreements if they need to. But this Rolls-Royce collaboration really is quite something. 2D Tech have agreed with Rolls-Royce to explore the properties of its of the materials that they have, to reduce the weight of electrical components and to increase resistance to corrosion in engine systems produced by Rolls-Royce. And of course, this doesn't just have benefits for the aerospace industry. It has benefits across the entire gamut of Rolls-Royce products as well. And obviously, the endorsement by Rolls-Royce of that name is a great shot in the arm. So I think to go back to my original point, Vrsaryan timed the agreement with Landsteg about right. They have this first announcement that they've made. Obviously, you spoke in more depth to Neil Ricketts, the CEO, last week. But this company looks as though it's got a very strong future. Sorted its funding out, and it's just really signed an agreement with just about the biggest brand name in the world. So I think 2020 looks very good for the company as we stand right now.
Yeah, well, you know, Vrsaryan, I mean, graphene is very exciting. I used to You know, I mean, it's hard to see. It's, you know, there's still this sort of in infancy. It's still experimental, isn't it? So they're still testing this out because there's many applications it can be used for. And yeah, it's an exciting space, graphene. Quite like it. Okay, and it's nice to know it's invented in the UK. You know,
exactly.
Not by two British guys though, but it was in the UK.
Yeah, it's a UK company. It's a UK company.
No, and, I mean, graphene. Graphene itself was invented in the UK.
It was, yeah. Graphene itself. It was University of Manchester, I think, wasn't it?
I think the guys weren't from the UK though. But nevertheless, the foundation's there. The infrastructure's there. Cool. What's next, Al?
Okay, well, just very quickly, I'm going to talk about a company called Two Shields Investment, and investment companies do make sense on a number of levels. You've got
and not on a number of levels.
Yeah, but they make sense in some ways and not in others. So with a number of small investment companies, you're looking at an investment across a range of companies. The spread of risk, the mitigation of risk to some degree, is very attractive. And just on that note, we spoke last week, of course, about Braveheart Investment Group that has a range of companies that are producing and developing solutions for the current COVID-19 crisis. Share price was 15p when we spoke last week. It's 24p as we speak this morning. So I think there's a general recognition that the companies owned by Braveheart are making rapid progress in this area. There was, in fact, an update after we spoke on the podcast last week with the company announcing developments and an increase on farm-to-farmers front of the production of hand sanitizer. So that's obviously an aside. So I've got another company this morning. Unlike Braveheart, this company doesn't pay a dividend, but it's invested across a number of disruptive markets. Has a 40% stake in West African Lithium. The company, by the way, Two Shields Investment, TSI, is the EPIC code. Shares have been as high as 0.31p on the year and as low as 0.06p, currently trading it at just over 10p. Gives a market cap of just under 7 million. The company, the last set of results showed that the company made a loss of $231,000, loss before tax, and that's a reduced loss compared to the loss of $1 million in the previous year. It owns a stake in West African Lithium and Botswana Nickel and Platinum. It's invested into battery metals and metals critical for the future energy industry. It has a 30% stake in Global Geoscience, has a small stake in Power Metal, run by Paul Johnson, of course, and also a stake in BrandShield Cybersecurity. And BrandShield have been sort of in the news recently. There's a lot of awareness about the company developing products to resolve issues with phishing and other systems. That's phishing with a PH, by the way. Also has a 10% stake in WeShop e-commerce. I think there's a really interesting mix of companies there. They're invested into a number of disruptive sectors, but BrandShield, I believe, are also looking to IPO later this year, so that I think will clearly bring further value to the company as and when that happens. But again, the spread of risk, no dividend paid. But at this level, really, it's just worth the value of the stakes. And there would appear to be a lot of upside in prospect for BrandShield and also the WeShop e-commerce solution that they run as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anything else, Al?
Okay. Yeah, clearly not impressed there. Clearly not impressed there, just. Oh, well, a
sometimes,
lot of invest-
yeah, no, yes, no, you know, it's not for me. It's maybe for other people. Go on. What's next?
A lot of investors and traders, in fact, will have got onto the Cat and I bandwagon over the past week.
Mainly traders.
Yeah. But there's no smoke
dirty
without fire.
Dirty traders looking for a cheap buck.
There's no smoke without fire. I mean, this, you know, the company was valued at I think £500,000 the week before last. So Cat and I Innovation,
is there smoke without fire though? Can you get smoke without fire?
Smoke without fire. Well, there's a little flame flickering somewhere, or certainly some smoking embers. You know, there's some heat there, so maybe it'll burst in. Well, I say it may burst into flame. It burst into flame last Monday. I mean, the shares just went ballistic. The stock was trading at 0.5p on the previous Thursday, hit I think 2p on the Friday, and then went up and hit 4.5p on the Monday. So literally, you know, of course, from a trading standpoint, it's great because traders were jumping in and out within a few hours and were making money. Currently at 2.5p trading wise, Kat and I have they're a blockchain company, DLT, Distributed Ledger Technology, not Dave Lee Travis. Thank goodness for that. So they have created, using blockchain technology, an immutable record keeping system which stores records that cannot be altered. So they are immutable, and obviously that is of great value. They have contracts and are working in a number of fields, in security, in insurance. They have a community system set up with Charlton Athletic Football Club and also Aston Villa. And what really propelled the stock last week was the announcement that they were entering into a joint venture with ZN Group to create a database and a joint venture company that would create COVID ID. In other words, people who are identifying people who had been treated for or had been tested for the COVID virus. And shares leapt on that news. There's no details of the revenue from that. There's no details.
No, there wouldn't be. On
any money. So this is all highly speculative, but nonetheless, Kat and I has really come back with a bang. So we need more details as we go forward. But also there are a number of board appointments that are of note too. There's a major investor, Brian Thompson, has come in, and also John Farthing, who I know personally has been appointed to the board as the group FD, and he's a very capable, very diligent and cautious man. So that interests me greatly, because often with these small companies, it's the caliber of personnel who come into the company that really define the future. And I think in the instance of Kat and I, they now have some very impactful people in place that weren't there a couple of weeks ago. So anyway, it's still highly speculative. There's no details on the money and the cash flow from these contracts yet, but I have no doubt that we'll have more information on this in the near future, and it looks set for a very exciting year.
Very exciting. Very exciting indeed.
Very, very exciting. Very exciting, yes.
What's the market cap now, Al?
Market cap is, well, it's probably 2.5 to 3 million, because literally it's I'm not sure how many shares an issue, but it basically, the price reflected the market cap, so it's about 2.5 million quid. Let me just go in and I will bring that up and tell you. Hang on, so cool. Hang on.
Yes, it's about 107 million shares an issue, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
By 0.25. That's about 2.6 million, I think.
Yeah, 2.6 million.
It's okay trading if you've got, if you don't want to take a big chunk. But trouble is, small caps, tiny caps are there. You can't take a big chunk, can you? Because you can't get out. You can't, that's the problem. That's why.
Well, the spread is ridiculous, and also other companies we've spoken about this morning, the spread's also ridiculous. I mean, Braveheart at one stage, the spread was I think last week when we spoke, it was the spread was something like 30 to 40%. It was just nuts. And
when you see it's a lovely spread, it doesn't work with shares. You don't want to see a lovely spread. You want to see a small, narrow, tiny spread, rather than I put a lovely big spread on for you. You don't want a market maker saying that to you. You want an auntie saying that to you or someone, but not a market maker.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy there. Just that's but you're right. I mean, it's the spread that really puts people off. But I think again, if you want to risk it and get in and day trade this, then and risk the big spread, then you know, because the share price has to move an awful lot for you to even get your money back in some cases.
But how much can you actually chuck in there before, you know, when you can't sell in big volume, can you? Because there's only a 2.5 million market cap. You can't get a live quote and all that stuff. By the time you get your money back out, it's pretty dropped. You know, if you try and sell something, it just reflects that and it just drops again. You think, oh, there we are. Well, I haven't really made a lot there.
Yeah, that's what can happen in this market. So I think that's when, you know, you've got to make the choice: am I a trader? Am I just trying to get in and out and have a punt, or am I invested into this company because I like the technology and I believe in the future? And I think if you take the latter approach, then the spread, the movement on the day, won't be so much of a concern. You're looking to the future for some real value, and obviously, as we know, and we've seen many times, you know, from these little acorns grow huge trees, and you know, a £2 million company can be a £20 million company, can be a £200 million company. So this is where it's great. And obviously, if you've got that money within an ISA wrapper, for instance, if you're looking further down the road, you know, potentially, as we've seen, there are a lot of ISA millionaires that are around now that have made their money through trading shares, and they've done so within the ISA wrapper, so that cash is tax free, and it does create a fantastic opportunity. It really does.
Yes, fantastic. Really does. So, anything else, Al, you want to talk about?
Well, we spoke about this before, and just I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time on this, again, in these times, we have to look at alternative investment classes. And I had a long chat this morning. Most of you who know me will know I'm very much into my motorcycles. But I also have a couple of rare old bikes. I have a 1979 Honda CBX, which is a six-cylinder motorcycle, and they're pretty rare. And in conker's condition, or what the chap I spoke to this morning, Paul Jason, refers to as investment-grade condition, they can be worth an awful lot of money. Why are they attractive? They take up a very small amount of room. Once they're over 40 years old, there's no road tax and no MOT because they're classed as historic vehicles. And also, if you buy one, he gave me an example. A friend of his had put £30,000 from his SIP with him and said, buy me some bikes. He bought a Ducati 900 SS, a sand-cast Honda CB750, and a couple of others. 10 years on, that group of motorcycles is worth about £300,000, and that's just through careful acquisition and also buying bikes that have great provenance and history, and also are what he classes as investment grade motorcycles. In other words, you can see the history all the way through: original paintwork, original materials, and not pattern parts. So, just something I just thought I'd throw that in there, because I think you know, often when we're focused on shares, there are other investment classes out there that might not be immediately obvious. But it's surprising how many people, if you drive around your neighbourhood, will have an old bike tucked away in the garage. So just something to bear in mind.
Okay. What are you saying? I understand. If people have a motorbike, an old bike in the garage, what do they do?
Well, if you've got an old bike in the garage and you've got the history on it, I mean, why not just drop me a text, or drop me send me a tweet through Alan_Green on Twitter or whatever you like, because I do know quite a bit about this. It's a hobby and something I've been dabbling in for years, and I mean, there was a case recently where an old Vincent motorcycle was auctioned off by Bonhams for £917,000, and this was one that was completely original. It had been flat raced in Australia. It looked a bit of a state, but it looked beaten up, but it was completely original, had all the provenance, and was as it came out of the factory, then the race shop, and was raced. £917,000 it went for at Bonhams. So all of a sudden, you might find this, you know, if you've got, say, an old BSA or an Orton or something, then that's great. They've got a value. But if there is provenance, or a friend of mine, for example, has an old Laverda that he's owned from new, and that bike, an old Laverda, which is an Italian motorcycle.
Oh, okay.
He's had that from new, and probably, you know, when it was new, he'd have paid, what, 1,800 quid for it, and they're now worth probably £25,000 to £30,000. I mean, the CBXs are some of the Conquers ones are going for £45,000 to £50,000, and the broker reckons they'll be over £100,000 pounds per item in a few years' time. So,
how much?
£100,000
on your bike.
Sorry.
I was just making a joke there. I said, on your bike.
On your bike. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Right, lovely. So if you've got an old, dusty old bike in the back of the garage, have a look at it, and if it's and contact Alan. Everyone who's got a bike in the garage, just contact Alan. Say, Alan, is it worth it? Take a picture. Is it worth anything else? And it'll be like Alan Green's you know, two-wheel antique roadshow. That'd be good, then.
Take a picture, ping it over, and
of your bike, that is. Just you know, keep it tasteful, these pictures you send to Alan, because he's got a sensitive mindset, and we don't want you know, trash and below the waistline sort of level.
Well, exactly. I have been sent some pictures that you know, my wife and family have found very offensive, and
not investment grade. They're definitely not investment grade.
No, they weren't aggressive investment grade pictures. That is for sure.
Yeah, marvellous. So keep it clean, everyone. Lovely. Cheers, Al. We'll speak to you next week.
Cheers, Joe. Speak next week, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Novasight, up 14% or 15% really to 425. At four, Perez Investments, had Nick on the podcast, of course, up 18%, 4.25 pence. At three, Avacta Group, up 1%, 93.5 pence. At two, it's Homogenics Pharmaceuticals, up 57%, 3.575. And at one, it's Amiga Diagnostics, up 44.74% to 55 pence. God, it's a lot of bounce today. The market's quite bouncy. It's a lot of green on the screen. It's very good. Okay, RNSs are as follows. At five, it is Aminex, Revuma license extension granted. At four, BP confirms commitment to completing Alaska sale. At three, Novasight, contract with the Department of Health for their COVID-19 tests. At two, Rehobold Resources, positive decision for EWT at West Newton. And at one, it's Amiga Diagnostics CE mark for the COVID-19 ELISA antibody tests. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.